Hello, this is Janice Schweizer with part two of the Pantograph for Tuesday, May 12, 2026. We begin on page A4 with the death notices. Beverly K. Lesh Hornickel, 78, of Bloomington Normal, Illinois, passed away on April 29, 2026. A visitation will be held on Friday, July 17, 2026, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Calvary United Methodist Church in Normal, Illinois. A celebration of life will be held at the church on Saturday, July 18th at 11 o'clock a.m. with 1 hour of visitation prior to the service and a light meal afterward. A private interment of ashes will be held for the family members. As arrangements continue to be finalized, family and friends are encouraged to check back for any updates or additional details. In lieu of flowers, the family encourages you to honor Bev by creating a moment of connection. Reach out to someone, gather with loved ones, or plan an adventure in her spirit. Should you wish to also donate in her honor, here are some organizations she believed in. IFYE USA, Humane Society of Central Illinois, or Bloomington Normal Midwest Food Bank. Online condolences and memories of Bev may be left for her family at KiblerBradyRustman.com. Larry Jean Woodson, 86, of New Braunfels, Texas, passed away November 23, 2025, in New Braunfels. Please join the family for a celebration of life service on Saturday, May 16th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Journey Church, 1320 East College Avenue in Normal, Illinois. Roger A. Coyne, 66, of Bloomington, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, May 9, 2026. Arrangements are pending at Beck Memorial Home in Bloomington, Illinois. Next, we'll turn to the sports page where we talk about college softball. The Titans rally for NCAA berth. Certa closes out win for third straight appearance, by Randy Reinhart. Illinois Wesleyan softball coach Tiffany Prager had pitching ace Gianna Certa ready for game two, if necessary, Saturday at the College Conference of Illinois and Wisconsin tournament. Prager decided necessary had arrived with one out in the seventh inning at Inspiration Field. As IWU's third pitcher of the game, Certa struck out the final two Augustana batters to wrap up a 5-4 victory as the top-seeded Titans completed the double elimination tournament without a loss. "You have a game plan. We were going to see what the game dictated," Prager said. "At that moment, we went with the pitcher of the year in the conference. All the pitchers did a great job, and Gianna did a great job of closing it out." IWU improved to 28-13 while winning their third straight CCIW tournament crown and the NCAA Division III tournament berth that goes with it. The Titans have won 18 conference tournament titles and will play in their 22nd NCAA tournament. "The perseverance and resilience of this team all year long to find a way to do it in the most important moments," marveled Prager. "They continued to find a way." After Certa hurled complete games in both a 9-6 triumph over North Central on Thursday for Prager's 300th career win and a 5-0 decision over Augustana on Friday, Mallory Holland started Saturday for the Titans. Holland surrendered a solo home run to Aubrey Graydon in the first and another single run in the fourth. She gave up a single and three straight walks as the Vikings, 28-15, assumed a 4-2 edge in the fourth. Caroline Gatchell relieved to record the final out of the fifth and set Augustana down 1-2-3 in the sixth. Gatchell hit a batter with one out in the seventh, prompting Prager to summon Certa. Certa fanned Emily Gadd and Graydon to set off a Wesleyan celebration. "In the dugout, I was mentally preparing for whatever I need to do and cheering for my teammates at the same time," Certa said. "Just go in there and get the job done. I've done this before. I can do it. Just trust and belief in myself the whole time." The Titans took a 5-4 lead in the sixth with three runs. Riley McDonald doubled home Margot Geary before Bella Pinter walked. McDaniel and Grace Wilkins, who had re-entered, each swiped a base before Kelsey Bartels lined a shot to center field. Augustana's center fielder, Marley Baim, got a glove on it but could not complete the diving catch as McDaniel and Wilkins scampered home. "I was just thinking, get a base hit, do anything I can for the team, move the runners," said Bartels. "I thought she was going to catch it, but the angle she took, I could see it wasn't going to work. I just knew then that we could keep going, and here we are." IWU grasped a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the first. Wilkins walked and Bartels singled to lead off. Bartels was attempting to sacrifice, but reached when the Vikings neglected to cover first base. Wilkins scored on a throwing error, and Bartels narrowly beat out the throw home on a Casey Wismiller ground ball to third base. Two walks loaded the bases with one out, but the Titans failed to capitalize with more damage. IWU appeared to have a key play in the fourth. McDaniel was hit by a pitch before Wilkins' bunt was thrown into the outfield and rolled to the wall as McDaniel scored and Wilkins motored around to third. However, Wilkins was called out for making contact outside the batter's box, and McDaniel had to return to first. The inning abruptly ended when Bartels' bunt was caught and McDaniel was doubled off first. "It was a pinky toe out of the box. That's the technical rule, so," said Prager. "That's the resilience of this team. They didn't let it get him down. That call had been made. They just found a way to stay the course and continue to fight for each pitch. That's what they've done all season, and we didn't expect anything less." In NASCAR, we have Van Gisbergen pulls off comeback win at Watkins Glen. NASCAR's road racing superstar put on a comeback for the ages on Sunday afternoon. After a pit stop with 24 laps to go at Watkins Glen International Trackhouse, racing Shane Van Gisbergen amazingly erased a 29-second deficit as he chased down leader Ty Gibbs and roared away to win the NASCAR Cup Series Go Bowling at the Glen in Watkins Glen, New York. The New Zealand-born driver fell to 22nd place after his last stop under green, but he set out to run down Gibbs and second-place teammate Connor Zillisch. He chopped off seconds each lap and passed Gibbs' number 54 Toyota with 8 laps left. The number 97 Chevrolet driver wound up beating runner-up Michael McDowell by a massive 7.288 seconds. While leading 74 of the race's 100 laps, Van Gisbergen notched his 6th victory in the past 7 road races and secured his 7th career cup win, all on road courses in just 62 starts. He joins Tyler Reddick as the only drivers to win from the pole this season. "We weren't very good in practice, and then qualifying was amazing. Good tweaks, and then today," said Van Gisbergen, who moved to 16th in the point standings. "I wasn't sure how it was going to work, and then to run them down like that, very special to do 2 Glen wins in a row." The 4th-year road ace claimed he wasn't as dominant as it looked. "It's not easy," he said. "Everyone's really good. There was a lot of pressure there. I think McDowell was good, Connor was good, Tyler Reddick. There were some really good guys and a lot of pressure. Just stoked for these guys and executing every facet of our game." Gibbs, Chase Briscoe, and Reddick rounded out the top 5. Chevrolet won for the 7th time in the past 8 visits to the Finger Lakes region's road layout and for the 4th time in a dozen starts in 2026. In 2026's 2nd race on a road course, Van Gisbergen started from the point after winning the pole Saturday on his 37th birthday. He sailed away from McDowell's Chevy by over 2 seconds after 8 times around the layout. As the only driver on pit road coming in after leading the first 18 laps, Van Gisbergen managed to finish 8th and earn stage points. The Trackhouse's Ross Chastain was first in the segment win, followed by Team Penske's Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney, but Chase Elliott decided not to pit and stayed out for points and ended up 12th. In the 30-lap stage 2, Trackhouse drivers Van Gisbergen and Zillisch checked out entirely, taking a healthy 5-second lead over McDowell by lap 38. Meanwhile, Chastain's number one fell back to 18th until flying debris, a black tent, landed on the track on lap 40. Spire Motorsports teammates McDowell and Daniel Suarez started 1 and 2 with 7 laps left in the stage, but the two Chevy drivers faded with 2 laps to go. Van Gisbergen beat Reddick by less than a second, followed by Gibbs, Austin Dillon, and Kyle Busch to end stage 2. Caution 3 flew on lap 60 when Logano's number 22 Ford lost a left front tire. Van Gisbergen and Reddick stayed out for track position, but the majority of the field pitted with the chance to make it to the end of fuel. Turning now to national and international news, we have an analysis, Trump seen as fraying alliances. Experts, actions feed fear that U.S. is unreliable, by Matt Spelanek and Andrea Shalal with Reuters. With his decision to pull some U.S. troops from Germany, his threats to draw down forces elsewhere in Europe, and his downplaying of Iran's recent attacks on an important Persian Gulf partner, President Donald Trump foreshadowed what could be the war's enduring legacy, the fraying of ties with key allies. Trump's words and deeds revived fears among Washington's longtime friends, from Europe to the Middle East to the Indo-Pacific, that the U.S. might be unreliable in a future crisis. Some traditional U.S. partners started to hedge their bets in ways that may bring long-lasting changes in relations with Washington, while adversaries such as China and Russia look to exploit strategic openings. Most analysts believe Trump's conduct since returning to office will further erode U.S. alliances. Trump's recklessness with respect to Iran is resulting in some dramatic shifts, said Brett Bruen, a former advisor in the Obama administration who now leads the Situation Room strategic consultancy. U.S. credibility is at stake. Tensions are especially high between Trump and the Europeans since he joined Israel in striking Iran on February 28th, claiming without evidence that Tehran was close to developing a nuclear weapon. Iran's retaliatory closure of the Strait of Hormuz unleashed an unprecedented global energy shock that made European countries some of the biggest economic losers from a war they never asked for. Trump also rattled allies by imposing sweeping tariffs, pushing to take over Greenland from Denmark, and cutting military aid to Ukraine. The rift widened when he announced that he'd withdraw 5,000 of the 36,400 U.S. troops stationed in Germany after Chancellor Friedrich Merz angered him by saying publicly that the Iranians were humiliating the U.S. The Pentagon then scrapped a planned deployment of Tomahawk cruise missiles to Germany. Trump, who long questioned whether the U.S. should remain in the NATO alliance it helped create after World War II, said he also was considering reducing U.S. forces in Italy and Spain, whose leaders are at odds with him over the war. Trump accused allies of doing enough to back the U.S. and suggested this meant Washington might no longer need to honor the alliance's Article 5 mutual defense clause. President Trump has made his disappointment with NATO and other allies clear, White House spokeswoman Anna Kelly said, noting host governments denied some U.S. requests to use military bases in Europe for the Iran war. While insisting Trump, quote, restored America's standing on the world stage and strengthened relationships abroad, close quote, she said he, quote, will never allow the U.S. to be treated unfairly and taken advantage of by so-called allies, close quote. Trump's Pentagon floated the prospect of punishing NATO allies it believes failed to support U.S. operations against Iran, including suspending Spain as a member and reviewing U.S. recognition of Britain's claim to the Falkland Islands. European governments responded by stepping up efforts to increase cooperation among themselves, shoulder more of their own defense burden, and jointly develop weapons systems to reduce reliance on the U.S. At the same time, they sought to convince Trump of the value of maintaining transatlantic allies. Europeans have limited options, especially given their dependence on the U.S. for strategic deterrence against Russia, and analysts say the transition to greater self-reliance will take years. In efforts to mollify Trump, European officials quietly stress that many of their countries allow U.S. forces to use their airspace and bases on their soil during the Iran campaign. But European leaders also are becoming more emboldened to stand up to Trump, analysts say. Jeff Rathke, president of the American-German Institute at Johns Hopkins University, said that while Merz previously seemed to charm Trump, now he is not trying to hide the critical assessment of what the U.S. has gotten itself into. Europeans are also mindful that Trump could feel unrestrained to do whatever he thinks on the world stage before he leaves office, one European diplomat said. As some European leaders sound the alarm about NATO's future, Polish Foreign Minister Radosław Sikorski told a conference in Warsaw, there is no need to panic so long as Europe delivers on promised higher military spending, which Trump long demanded. Trump went to war against the advice of some Gulf partners, and though they soon lined up in solidarity, some now worry he could strike a deal that leaves them facing a still dangerous neighbor. When Iran launched missile and drone attacks against the UAE, a close U.S. ally, Trump and his aides seemed to turn a blind eye, causing further unease among Gulf Arab states already hit hard by the conflict. Trump was quick to dismiss the May 4th strike as minor, though it set fire to the important Fujairah oil port and prompted the government to close schools, and even after further attacks later that week, he insisted a month-old ceasefire had still held. The war also stirred anxiety among Asian partners, many heavily dependent on oil that flowed freely through the Strait of Hormuz before the conflict. Countries like Japan and South Korea already were unsettled by Trump's high tariffs and disparagement of traditional alliances. Some may now wonder whether the vulnerability he showed to economic pressure at home, including high gasoline prices, could mean Trump might hesitate when asked to help in a conflict with China, such as an invasion of Taiwan. What worries us most is that trust in, respect for, and expectations toward the United States, the core partner in the alliance Japan values most, have been shrinking, Takeshi Iwaya, who served as Japan's foreign minister at the start of Trump's second term, told Reuters. It could cast a long shadow over the entire region. Experts warn that Trump's use of raw power in a war of choice against Iran, just weeks after the U.S. captured Venezuela's president, could embolden China and Russia to intensify coercive moves against their neighbors. The two longtime allies of Iran mostly steered clear of the war, but analysts say they are watching closely. David Shepherdson with Reuters writes, Dem says Disney a target. Gomez, authorities weaponizing agency to quell free speech. The Trump administration is engaged in a targeted effort to censor Disney and its ABC network through a series of sweeping regulatory actions, the only Democrat on the Federal Communications Commission said on Monday. What Disney and ABC are facing is not a series of coincidental regulatory actions, but a sustained, coordinated campaign of censorship and control carried out through the weaponization of the FCC's authority as a federal regulator and aimed at pressuring a free and independent press and all media into submission, FCC Commissioner Ana Gomez wrote in a letter to Disney CEO Josh D'Amaro. Last month, Republican FCC Chairman Brendan Carr ordered an unusual early review of licenses for Disney and eight ABC stations. The FCC has not revoked a broadcast license in more than four decades. Disney's broadcast licenses were not scheduled to be reviewed before October 2028. The FCC quickly ordered the review after a joke by ABC late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel drew calls from the White House for the comedian to be fired. Carr is also investigating ABC daytime talk show The View after claiming it is subject to federal equal time rules for political candidates. In February, the FCC said it was probing whether The View violated equal time rules for interviews with political candidates after an appearance by Democratic U.S. Senate candidate James Tallarico. The FCC said talk shows are no longer considered bona fide news programs and that would be exempt from the rules. In November, President Donald Trump demanded the FCC revoke ABC licenses after he criticized an ABC News correspondent for asking Saudi Arabia's Crown Prince about the 2018 killing of a Washington Post columnist in a question he dubbed insubordinate. In December 2024, ABC News agreed to give $15 million to the Trump Presidential Library to resolve a lawsuit over comments that anchor George Stephanopoulos made on air involving the civil case brought against Trump by writer E. Jean Carroll. That settlement did not buy you peace. It only bought you time. Disney's experience since then has made one thing undeniable for any company facing the same pressure. You cannot buy this administration's favor. For the right price, you can only borrow it. And the price always goes up, Gomez wrote. Disney and Carr did not respond to our request for comment. Next, we have Supreme Court delays abortion pill ruling. Cases on hold until Thursday after request from two drug makers. The U.S. Supreme Court on Monday extended a pause on a ruling that would curb the abortion pill mifepristone from being prescribed through telemedicine and dispensed through the mail in a challenge by a Republican-led Louisiana lawsuit to a federal rule that eased access. Justice Samuel Alito kept the matter on hold until Thursday, meaning the pill can continue to be dispensed by mail pending further order by the court. The nine justices are considering a request by two manufacturers of the medication to lift a decision by a New Orleans-based Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to block a 2023 rule issued by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration during Democratic former President Joe Biden's administration. The appeals court ruling May 1st reinstated an older requirement that patients get mifepristone only after an in-person visit with a clinician. Drug makers Danco Laboratories and GenBio Pro appealed the Fifth Circuit action restricting access. The Supreme Court, in an interim decision on May 4th, put the Fifth Circuit action on hold to give the justices more time to decide how to proceed. And in the digest, we have the U.S. Supreme Court cleared the way Monday for Alabama Republicans to pursue a congressional voting map more favorable to their party ahead of November's midterm elections. The latest fallout from the court's seismic voting rights ruling. The justices lifted a lower court's decision that blocked state Republicans' preferred map as racially discriminatory and for illegally diluting the voting power of black Alabamians. The politically conservative southern state is expected to seek to revert to the previous map, which would drop the number of districts where black voters make up a majority or near majority from 2 to 1 out of the state's 7 U.S. House districts. Use of the previous map could benefit Republicans. Virginia Democrats asked the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday to revive a congressional map designed to boost their party's chances in November's midterm elections, turning to the court as Republicans, including allies of President Donald Trump, seek to preserve their narrow control of Congress. The case thrust Virginia into an unusual mid-decade redistricting showdown as courts weigh whether lawmakers can remake House districts outside the normal post-census cycle, with control of a narrowly divided Congress potentially hanging in the balance. Virginia's top court on May 8th threw out a new electoral map that was crafted to flip 4 Republican-held U.S. congressional seats to the Democrats, dealing a setback to the Democratic hopes of retaking the U.S. House. U.S. existing home sales rebounded less than expected in April and could struggle to gain altitude as mortgage rates remain elevated and rising inflation squeezes household budgets. The Environmental Protection Agency said Monday it would speed up the process for large polluters to obtain clean air permits, the latest move by the Trump administration to ease regulations on American power plants and industry. President Donald Trump on Monday nominated Cameron Hamilton to lead the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is part of the Department of Homeland Security, just a year after Hamilton was ousted as FEMA's acting director. The White House invited these executives to accompany President Donald Trump on his trip to China this week. Tesla's Elon Musk, Apple's Tim Cook, Goldman Sachs Group's David Solomon, Blackstone's Stephen Schwarzman, BlackRock's Larry Fink, Citigroup's Jane Fraser, and Meta Platform's Dina Powell McCormick, Bloomberg News reported on Monday. Two members of the House of Representatives plan to introduce legislation Monday to toughen a government ban on Chinese automakers entering the American market. The legislation would codify a regulation imposed by the Biden administration. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit Monday against Netflix, accusing the streaming company of spying on children and other consumers by collecting their data without consent and designing its platform to be addictive. A Netflix spokesperson said the company plans to address the allegations in court. And we have man pleads not guilty to trying to kill Trump. Cole Allen accused of assaulting officer at the correspondence dinner. The man accused of attempting to assassinate President Donald Trump at a White House reporters gala last month pleaded not guilty on Monday to all charges. Cole Allen, 31, of California, did not speak in court as his attorney, Tizira Abe, entered the plea on his behalf. The charges include attempted assassination of the president, assault on a federal officer, and firearms offenses. Prosecutors allege Allen fired a shotgun at a U.S. service agent and stormed a security checkpoint in a foiled attack on Trump and other members of his administration at the White House correspondents' dinner. Allen allegedly traveled to Washington by train, carrying a shotgun, pistol, and knives, and booked a room in the Washington Hilton where the April 25th dinner took place. It was Allen's first appearance in Washington federal court before the judge who will preside over the case, U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden. A different judge last week apologized to Allen for his treatment in a Washington, D.C. jail, which included being placed on suicide precautions and isolated him from other inmates. And we'll finish today with the flick fact. We have a new survey of air travelers has revealed, quote, America's naughtiest air travel habits, close quote. Do you know the nastiest habits of ours when it comes to flying, according to the J.D. Power survey? Well, the answer is overloading the overhead bins, leaving less space for others to avoid our own luggage fees, incessant coughing, reclining a seat without asking behind you, leaving gross garbage like diapers in the seat pocket, and pushing with your feet or knees on the seat in front of you. Also, in the top 10, wearing too much cologne or perfume. And with that, we will conclude the reading of Part 2 of the Pantograph for Tuesday, May 12, 2026. I'm Janice Schweizer, and I hope you have a great day.